This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow unless there's a problem. And we will hope there isn't a problem. it looks like my recorder's a little far back. I'm going to yank it forward. So there's going to be some scratching sound. I apologize for that in advance. There we go. Okay, I'm sure that made a world of difference in the quality of the recording. I do have to admit, it's episode 213 today. I do have to admit that after I recorded the last podcast, which was almost 2 weeks ago at this point, because I recorded 211 and then I recorded 212 the very next day as I took my dad home from getting some medical tests done, which, by the way, I took him to the doctor last Friday. For being 90 years old, we're doing okay. The doctor said that he gave my dad an A- for health. So that's pretty good in terms of his kidneys and how everything's working. That's pretty good at this point. I did have a comment from a friend this week that was saying how lucid my dad was and how enjoyable he was to listen to. And, you know, he really hoped that when he was 90 that he would be doing that well. And he is doing well. There's obviously some things that he struggles with in terms of macular degeneration and hearing and some of those things. But, you know, all is well. All is just fine. I do have to admit that when I recorded that episode and then had almost 2 weeks to think about doing the next podcast, there were a couple of times when I think to myself, you know what? You've done 212 podcasts. It probably ain't going to get any better than that. You should just quit now. Oh, the flesh is funny. But having said that, it really doesn't take me that much preparation time, as you can tell, because I just babble along here as I'm driving home. And so, you know, who knows? Maybe there will be something in this great pile of words that will assist someone at some point or give somebody something to think about. I also had a friend mention to me about Bitcoin this week, had listened to some podcast. Actually, the same friend that was talking to me about my dad. I don't want you to think I have a ton of people who actually listen to this podcast, because I don't. But he's in the financial markets, and so he was cautioning me on Bitcoin. And I should probably give you an update on Bitcoin. I managed to get even again when it looked like I was going to be losing money on it, because did I mention this last week? I don't know if I did. Anyways, I had bought in at 93 because it looked like it was going up, and then it promptly proceeded to go up to about 100 and then kept piddling down. And so I waited till it got down to like 60, and I bought in 10 more at 60, bought in 20 at 93, bought in 10 more at 60, and then it kept piddling around. Eventually it piddled up to 85-ish or so, and I just sold everything at 85 approximately. And that actually got me $40 ahead of where I had started, and within $20, $15 or $20 of being completely good, even after all the transaction fees. So I was pretty happy with that, and I thought, well, I'll just wait till it goes back down to 65 or so and buy in again. Well, of course, it hasn't gone down since then, and right now it's been bouncing around about 150, although I checked before I left, and it was down to 137. So my plan is just to wait it out, because in the last week, it's gone from 70 to it's peaked at about 150, which is ridiculous. That's just ridiculous that something could increase that much in value in that short a time, especially when there's such a small percentage of Bitcoins actually trading. When you look at the trade volume out of the 11.5 million, well, just over 11 million Bitcoins that are in existence, I'm guessing that, you know, probably there's only about 500,000 of them that are being bounced back and forth between people. And so it's really kind of silly at this point. So I'm just waiting because if they run it up again, which they probably will do, there will come a point when everyone will decide to take their profits and they will start bailing out fast. And once we hit that, then the market will panic crash. And it looks like it shores up someplace around 50 or 60. So I just have a buy order in there and we'll just buy up at that point. So it'll be interesting to see how this all works out. I mean, it might be 2 years from now I'm doing the podcast going, man, I should have got in because now it's 15,000. But that's life. And like I said, I'm even. So it's fine. It's just money. Anyways, I've had some nice conversations with friends this week. Best buddy in the world. I got a chance to get together with him on Monday and had a really nice chat with him. Had a chat with a buddy on Tuesday and had a chat with a buddy on Wednesday and got together with the young couple that I usually get together with on Saturday, I think. And so it's been, or wait, no, did we? I can't remember. Anyways, it's been good. Yes, I did. Got together with a couple on Saturday. Because I took a copy of Still Whispers to one of the servers at the restaurant where we go. She had told me earlier in the week that it was her birthday. She was turning 24. So I brought her a copy of Still Whispers. Anyways, so this week in my thinking about, well, you should just quit, or what am I going to talk about? There was actually two different topics, and one was going to require a little more research. And so I decided to go after the easy one. The caveat being, I'm not really sure what the conclusion is to all of this. But I think I know that it's not quite the conclusion that the author of the talk came to. So I'll just go through what he said, and then I'll give my kind of reaction to it. And I thought it was an interesting TED Talk. The name of the TED Talk, I didn't write it down. I've still got on my notes the name of the last TED Talk we talked about. But it was Ken Jennings who was giving the talk, who some of you may remember is the all-time highest Jeopardy champion. He was on Jeopardy for a ridiculous number of appearances. It did really, really well. And you may or may not be aware that IBM started a project several years ago and they spent tens of millions of dollars. They put together this computer, this ginormous computer, and they taught it a natural language interface so that it could play Jeopardy, which is a ridiculously difficult project because the Jeopardy questions all use puns and they're very hard from a processing standpoint. And so Ken Jennings was actually kind of talking about his background a little bit and then talking about this experience of playing against this IBM computer known as Watson. And I actually saw the episode where they were playing against Watson. Ken Jennings, and I think the second highest or close to it, champion on Jeopardy. And frankly, Watson pretty much obliterated him. What was really fascinating was that when Watson would get something wrong, it would be completely wrong. It wouldn't even be in the ballpark wrong. It would be stuff you'd look at it and think, what? It would be like answers of, I have to do it in Jeopardy format. So I have to come up with the answer, and so they have to get the question. Whatever, has the highest fat content of any cheese sold in North America? And Watson would say, what is car? I mean, when it would get it wrong, it would just be wrong. But it got a lot more right than it got wrong. And it looked like there for a little while that they were going to be able to hold their own against it, but Watson came roaring on. So it was interesting. Ken Jennings was talking about the fact that, you know, for better or for worse, he's always going to be the know-it-all guy, the guy who knows a lot of weird stuff. And it's something that he's aspired to for years. He said he realized very quickly as a teenager, that it's not a hit with girls to know Captain Kirk's middle name. That's true. The only reason I highlight that statement is because I happen to know Captain Kirk's name, so I could commiserate with him on that. It happens to be Tiberius, which any Star Trekker will tell you. So anyways, he said that back in the mid-80s when Jeopardy came back on the air, he was actually living with his parents in South Korea, and there was only one English language channel, and it had Jeopardy on, and he used to race home after school so that he could watch Jeopardy, because his whole thing was about acquiring knowledge, knowing knowledge. So eventually he goes on Jeopardy, of course does extraordinarily well, and comes with a certain amount of fame. That comes with a certain amount of fame and recognition, and that opens many doors for him. And so he's enjoying all of that. In the middle of all of that, he said he thought it was around 2009 that he got a phone call from Jeopardy. And Jeopardy said, yeah, it's the early days yet, but IBM tells us they want to build a supercomputer to beat you at Jeopardy. Are you up for this? And he says, sure. And one of the reasons he said, sure, well, he was a tech guy to begin with, because I think he had made his living working in the tech world, so he knew something about computers. But he said the third reason, there was a couple of more that are not important. He said yes, because he was pretty confident. He said, I'm going to win. He said there were no computers that I knew of that could do what was needed on Jeopardy. He said, you got a natural language interface. You got to understand all the double meanings, the puns, the red herrings, and unpack the meaning of the clue, you know, and then you got to phrase it as a question. He said, it's the kind of thing that a 3 or 4 year old human could do, but he knew it was very hard for the computer. And he thought, well, this is going to be child's play. And he said, I'll just come there and destroy the computer and defend my species. Well, he said, you know, as the years went on, he said there was this graph showing performance on Jeopardy. And he said it has this scatter plot, and way up in the corner, there's these little tiny dots, and those were me. He said I was the one who was separate, way up in the corner. And he said, and then there was this line as to how well this new computer was doing, and the line just kept getting higher. And he said, I kind of realized, I saw the line, it was coming for me. So he goes on Jeopardy. He said, we didn't actually play it on the Jeopardy set because Watson is not mobile. He said, it's thousands of processors, has a terabyte of memory. I'm assuming that's maybe RAM, I guess. And he said it has trillions of bytes of memory. He said it's all housed in a climate-controlled room. And he said, you know, we go to the secret IBM facilities. And he said, right away, we recognize that the computer has the home court advantage. There's this big logo on the floor that says Watson. You know, he said the crowd is full of IBM VPs and programming cheering for Watson. And, you know, hoping against hope that the humans will screw up. They're holding up their Go Watson signs. And he said, you know, according to him, Watson won handily. I remember at the end of it, Ken Jennings had written on his board, "I, for one, welcome our robot overlords." But he actually talked about in this talk that maybe that wasn't as easy for him as he made it seem. Because he said, Watson had this robot thumb that was clicking the buzzer in order that he, when he thought he had an answer, he would ring in like they do on Jeopardy. But he said, you could hear this little tick, 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 beside me. And he said, I could remember thinking, this is it. So I felt obsolete. It's like a Detroit worker in 1980 watching a robot assemble cars. And then he started rehearsing some of the things that are happening in the knowledge business. He said a lot of law firms are getting rid of their paralegals because there's software that can sum up case laws and legal briefs and decisions. You don't need human assistance anymore. Said he read the other day about a program that can feed it that you can feed it box scores for a baseball or football game, and it'll spit out an article summarizing the game. You can comment on it. And this has been coming for some time, but these kind of expert systems, businesses really like these kind of expert systems because then they don't have to pay humans to do it. And Ken Jennings did recognize, he said, that there's actually kind of two views of the future. He said some economists are saying that the result of these new technologies will enter a golden era of leisure where we'll all be able to do the things that we really love, because all these onerous tasks will be taken over by Watson and his digital brethren. He said, I've heard other people say quite the opposite, that this is yet another tier of the middle class that's having the thing they do taken away from them by a new technology. And this is actually something ominous, something we should be worried about. Here's my take on all this. The fact of the matter is, technology costs money. And the only reason that businesses are willing to invest in technology is because it takes less money than the humans, or it is more accurate, or it is faster. And there's no way that businesses are going to tell their workers, well, now that we have this technology that does all this wonderful stuff, we'll just pay you to sit at home and live a life of leisure. That is not going to happen because technology costs money. Someone has to keep it up. Someone has to feed the beast. Costs money. So this idea that someday our digital brethren like Watson are going to alleviate us of toil, and so we'll just be able to pursue anything we want, that is a pipe dream. It's not going to happen. What is going to happen is you are going to end up with a lot of people who are left behind in the technological wave or the outsourcing wave. And it's going to be more and more difficult for them to find gainful employment. There will always be jobs for humans interfacing with humans, always. But as Watson and those types of computers get better and better, some of those jobs will even start disappearing. So this is going to be a very fascinating world to see how it all transpires now. You know, for me personally, I'm honestly not that concerned about it because I know how slow businesses are to adapt. And frankly, I'm 54. I retire in 13 years. So unless there's an apocalypse, it'll probably be okay, and I will probably have enough money saved up that I will be able to sit in my little room and write, and everything will be great. But hey, if not, then we'll just see what the next thing is that happens, and it will be fine. I feel like one of the things I have going for me, well, let's hold on that. Because that will impact the end of this discussion. So anyways, as you can imagine, when Ken Jennings went through this experience, this was a pretty humbling and disruptive experience for him. Because this had been his thing, his ability to have this amazing treasure trove of knowledge. One moment, getting my mail. And now, all of a sudden, there was a computer that could do this. And, of course, he knows that technology is just going to get cheaper. Computers are just going to go faster. And even though Watson takes up a whole room at this point, can't travel, it's not going to be that many years away when there will not be these rooms available over the internet. And Google will have rooms and rooms of these computers just waiting for you to ask a question so that it can find you the information that it wants or so that it can do what you command. Obviously, this is a huge wave of the future. I'm backing into my garage. So he was trying to come to... I'm talking louder so you can hear me. So he was trying to come to grips with all of this. That have we truly now moved into a new age where there's really no advantage having knowledge? Do we just surrender it all to our web browsers and to Google, and do we just go out and get whatever we need? And... granted, I think he's a little biased because he needs to come to an answer that supports the activity that he's been doing all his life. He said, the more I thought about it, the more I realized, no, it's still important. The things we know are still important. I came to believe there were two advantages that those of us who have these things in our head have over someone who says, oh yeah, I can Google that, hold on a second. According to him, there's an advantage of volume and there's an advantage of time. The advantage of volume has to do with the fact that the scope of human information is now doubling 18 months or so. This was an amazing statistic. The sum total of human information, that means that between now and late 2014, we will generate as much information in terms of gigabytes as all humanity has in the previous millennia put together. It's doubling every 18 months now. But he said, while that's a daunting thing that people don't want to even try to learn information, it's also important, according to him, for us to have certain information so that you can make informed decisions. And while you certainly don't have any chance of making informed decisions about everything, there are some things that you can make informed decisions about. And there are sometimes when you do not have the time to do the research. He did tell a really interesting story about a little girl named Tilly Smith. Said she was 10 years old. She was from Surrey, England. They were on vacation. She was on vacation with her parents a few years ago in Phuket, Thailand. He said she runs up to them on the beach one morning. She says, "Mom, Dad, we've got to get off this beach." And they say, "What do you mean? We just got here." And she said, "In Mr. Kearney's geography class last month, he told us that when the tide goes out abruptly out to sea and you see waves churning out there, that's a sign of a tsunami, and you need to clear the beach." Thankfully, her parents listened to her. They told the lifeguard. They went back to their hotel, and the lifeguard cleared over 100 people off of that beach. Luckily, because that was the day of the Boxing Day tsunami, the day after Christmas 2004, that killed thousands of people in Southeast Asia and around the Indian Ocean, but not on that beach, not on Mai Khao Beach, because this little girl had remembered a fact from her geography teacher a month before, which that's pretty cool. He said facts come in handy in situations like that, but he said they also come in handy when it's a social situation, and that's true. He said if you're meeting someone for the first time and, you know, you're chatting with them, knowledge can kind of lubricate things. When you say, someone says where you're from and I say, "Oh, yeah," or "your alma mater or your job, and I just know a little something about it," enough to get the ball rolling. He said people love that connection. And he said it's not as effective when you say, wait, hold on. Let me go Google Fargo, North Dakota, and we'll see what comes up. Okay, all of that is true. But it is also true that what's going to happen in the future is that connectivity is more going to become more and more available. And with things like Google Glasses, you are going to have more and more stuff that's going to be available to you. Like as the other person is talking, you're going to be able to have it listen to the other person talking and recognize this isn't someone you know, and then start scrolling facts down on your display that you might talk to them about to say, "Oh yeah, I heard that that's such, 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 such." I mean, all these things are coming. And it wouldn't even surprise me if someday we had computers that could watch that tsunami go out and say, "Hey, you need to get off this beach." Or as soon as the alert went out that there was an earthquake and potential tsunami, it would just beam to your headset and say, "You need to seek higher ground right now." I mean, all those things can happen. Ken said in his speech that, "I feel like our civilization works when this vast cultural heritage that we all share and that we know without having to outsource it, works when this is a vast cultural heritage that we all share and know without having to outsource it to our devices, to our search engine, our smartphones." And he was referring to, people that have this knowledge that they carry around with them. And that way it may be. And he was trying to wrap up and encourage people to, learn things. He said, in the movies, when computers like Watson start to think, things don't always end well. Those movies are never about beautiful utopias. It's always about a Terminator or a Matrix or an astronaut getting sucked out of an airlock. Things go terribly wrong, and I feel that we're at that sort of point now where we need to make a choice of what kind of future we'll be living in. This is a question of leadership, because it becomes a question of who leads in the future. On the one hand, we can choose between a golden age where information is more universally available than it's ever been in human history, where we all have the answers to our questions at our fingertips. On the other hand, we have the potential of living in some gloomy dystopia where the machines have taken over and we've all decided it's not important what we know anymore. The knowledge isn't valuable because it's all out there in the cloud, and why would we ever bother learning anything new? And I can tell you right now it's it's going to be the second one. I'm just telling you right now it's going to be. I mean, we already see it when, who is it, Jimmy Fallon? Is it Jimmy Fallon that goes to Coachella? I think it was Fallon. Goes to Coachella and just makes up bands, don't even exist. And he's going around and asking people who are fans at Coachella who are attending, what do you think about such and such a band? And they just go on about, oh, I really like them, you know, and their lyrics are so bad. Because people don't have any idea, and they're not going to admit they don't have any idea. Because that's the human race, okay? That's what we're dealing with. And Ken Jennings, you know, said, we can live in one of these two worlds. We can live in a world where our brains and the things we know continue to be a thing that makes us special, or we can live in a world where we've outsourced all of that to evil supercomputers from the future like Watson. Ladies and gentlemen, the choice is yours. Yeah, well, my good friend Ken Jennings, I think the choice has already been made, and people will continue to make the choice, and all you have to do is look at Man on the Street interviews, and you can figure out pretty quick where the vast majority of people are going. When I first started having Google on my phone was known as the conversation killer, because people wanted to, you know, sit around and pontificate about a piece of this knowledge and a piece of that knowledge. And I just go, well, let's just look it up. And so, and now that I can talk to it, you know, now people just look at me and say, what is such and such and such? And I just ask my phone and my phone tells me. Because that component is just knowledge. Now, I think one thing that computers will never take away, they might be able to simulate it, and has already simulated it in programs like Eliza, is the creation of a connection between human beings. The creation of a connection between entities that are a mix of flesh and spirit, that are noble and at the same time flawed, that can be encouraged to be more noble or can be goaded into being more flawed. I'm sure someday they will have computers that will simulate a lot of those things, will be your best friend in the world. And I'm sure some people, I would not doubt at all, 50, 60, 70 years from now, if we don't have the big new movement is going to be robot marriage. Because these robots will be trained to be so much more likable than any human partner that you could find. But at this point in my life, I think that meaning and joy and all the things that make life wonderful comes from two places. One is a relationship with the Creator who started all of this. And the other is relationships with each other. And that takes time, and I think that's more valuable than everything in the world. This is my buddy calling me, and I have to take this. So that's that. I'm home. Have a great week.